Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Active Radio KHII 88.9 FM Podcast. We really appreciate you joining us today. My name is John Hurt, and we're going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our community. By sharing knowledge through our conversations, we will try to impart some information you may need about what is happening in the Tularosa Basin and across southern New Mexico. So let's get to the interviews.
And good morning. It is 6:30. I'm Mike Durler with you. Joining me on the phone for our usual Tuesday discussion is Paul Gissing with the Rio Grande Foundation. Good morning, Paul.
Hey, good morning, Mike.
How's everything going up there in Albuquerque?
Oh, well, things are going fine with me and my family. But, you know, the politics of what's going on around here are always a little crazy. So, you know, got plenty to talk about this morning.
Yeah, we do. Let's start off with that Albuquerque Air Board and the Crisis of Democracy. Wow, what a title.
Yeah, well, I think it's fair once you hear what I'm about to say. So, long story short, back when we were having those hearings on the electric vehicles and the Environmental Improvement Board, I mentioned perhaps that there were two boards present. One was the EIB, the governor's board.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was a separate group there. It was the local air quality board, Albuquerque and Bernalillo County. That group passed the governor's EV mandate 7-0. They are also an unelected board, and they are theoretically responsible to Albuquerque City Council and Bernalillo County. It's kind of a joint board there because Bernalillo County encapsulates Albuquerque. So the long and short of it is that there were efforts underway at City Council to shift the way this board works and their membership, and make them more accountable to the City Council, make their meetings transparent under New Mexico's Open Meetings Act, make the members of the board issue experts in the areas that they regulate, which is, of course, air quality. That bill was simultaneously moving through the City Council while this whole process was going on at the Environmental Improvement Board. And you have other regulations that were not related to electric vehicles that are also under consideration by this board, which had drawn the attention of folks from Kirtland Air Force Base, University of New Mexico, because this other legislation was going to have a negative impact on air permitting. It was going to make it very difficult to get air permits, even for the university and the Air Force Base, you know. And if those two entities are struggling, you can only imagine what small businesses are going to have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So those reforms passed City Council 5-4. That was vetoed by the mayor, Keller, who's a hard left progressive. He thought he had won the day because you need 6 votes in order to override the mayor in Albuquerque, and you know what? They actually got the 6th vote on a override vote, so they overrode the mayor's veto, and essentially that's where it should have ended. The air board should have been disbanded, and the whole conversation should have been done. Well, the board has continued to meet. Their council is Senator Antoinette Padilla-Lopez, who's one of the hard left, most progressive members of the entire New Mexico legislature, and she just happens to be the attorney for this local board. And they've continued to meet under her auspices. They are suing to keep their power, which is baffling because they're not an elected board. They should be just done. And the mayor is encouraging this behavior. He tweeted as much, saying that in his mind, City Council overreached their power, even though they're the democratically elected governing board of the city of Albuquerque, and he's supposed to be the executive just carrying out their wishes. So an extremely messy situation, but I think when I talk about it being a crisis of democracy, I think that's a fair statement.
Well, I tell you what, from listening to it, it sounds to me like the mayor is kind of like, I'll do what I want to do, and you have to go along with me. And the city council is saying, no, we're going to do what we want to do, and you have to go along with us.
Yeah, and the honest truth is that city council is the one in the position to do what they want to do.
Right.
Especially when they have the votes to override the mayor, and it should be an open and shut conversation after that. But, you know, progressive, you know, as much as people complain about, you know, Donald Trump and the power, et cetera, that he didn't want to give up. Well, when really push comes to shove, we know who truly likes to cling to power, and it tends to be the progressives who their entire approach to life revolves around government power and getting it and maintaining it. So it's not at all surprising to me, but it is sad. And, you know, I know that there will be lawsuits, but it shouldn't come to that. It should be as simple as, all right, you did not get the number of votes to withhold, you know, the veto or hold up the veto, and the situation to be resolved from there. But as we've seen, progressives, especially in this state where they think they really have the ability to do whatever they want, are not relinquishing under Democratic, small d Democratic votes of elected bodies. So we will see how this situation unfolds, but I think it's relevant to everybody in the state of New Mexico because these unelected boards are out of control. And the Albuquerque Journal had excellent editorial to this effect, really calling out the Albuquerque Berlioz Air Quality Board for their overreach and their effort to, you know, really hold on to power that is no longer theirs.
Yeah. It is kind of a crazy thing, and I think the one thing that Albuquerque, Tim Keller in particular, doesn't understand with these EV mandates and putting an end to gas vehicles in their city, well, they're going to put an end to things like, oh, I don't know, Balloon Fiesta, the Big Zoo and park up there, and just all kinds of people coming to Albuquerque going, nope, don't think so.
Yeah, that will be the end effect of this. And like so many of those politicians who do these kinds of things, including our governor, they just assume that they'll be out of office by the time the situation really gets out of control, and that they can that they'll be riding off into the sunset and won't have to deal with the repercussions.
They will in one way or the other, whether you're in office or you're out of office, previously be in office, it's going to impact everyone.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, the New Mexico Public Education, let's go back up here. Another land grab underway in southern New Mexico. Boy, they want electric vehicles and they want our land too.
Exactly. And this was announced by U.S. Congressman Gabe Vasquez, of course, who represents District 2 or is elected to hold that seat. Whether he represents the area or not is a different question. But Gabe Vasquez and a very left-wing state senator, Kerry Hamblin, announced plans last week to create a 245,000-acre national monument near Deming, New Mexico, in what are known as the Florida Mountains and the Cooks Range and Good Sight Mountains to the city's north. It is called the Membres Peak National Monument. That is the proposal. And as soon as this was released, this announcement was made, the environmental groups that support this initiative had a slick website ready to go, and they are collecting emails of supporters of the concept. So groups like NM Cafe, the Green Chamber of Commerce of Las Cruces, New Mexico Wildlife Federation and New Mexico Wild are to name a few of the groups that are behind this. So this is essentially an effort to lock up a very significant tract of land. We also, of course, remember the Oregon Mountain or Oregon Peaks Monument that was locked up by Obama in 2014. And, you know, all I can say is that folks in southern New Mexico need to be very clear and very vocal in reaching out and opposing this in the media, writing letters to Gabe Vasquez and pushing back in any way they can, because just like so much of the stuff that we talk about, like the electric vehicles and this clean air mandate in Albuquerque, there really is not a process in place for these kinds of things. The process, unfortunately, when it comes to tying up large tracts of federal lands, as people may recall when Obama did it, the president can use this Antiquities Act that was passed in 1906, which is supposed to reference small tracts of land, monuments, maybe like around a battlefield or something, not just arbitrarily locking up 240,000 acres of land. So this is right out of the Radical Environmental Playbook. As long as President Biden is in office, this is a clear and present danger to people who have any leases, any use of those lands, and it's something that needs to be addressed, because Biden could easily use the stroke of a pen to lock up this land tomorrow or on his way out of office if he chose to do so. And it's one of the huge problems with that law that needs to be reformed. But of course, you've got to get majorities in Congress, conservative majorities, and conservative president to do it. And that's not been the case in recent memory, that you've been able to have the votes necessary to reform the 1906 Antiquities Act, or to clarify. The courts could step in as well. That's a separate issue. But ultimately, this is just a massive pushing match between proponents and opponents, and the best way to show opposition is just getting the communities of southern New Mexico to actively oppose it to the best extent possible, and make that clear to the media and the Biden administration. So it's a tough fight. And I do think that it gives opponents of Gabe Vasquez an opportunity to really push back against him and his reelection. And we'll see how that goes. But I did receive a few nice notes from Representative Yvette Harrell, who is, of course, former Representative Yvette Harrell, who, of course, somebody who's concerned about 30 by 30 and the increasing grabbing of land by the federal government. We're actually having an event today. I realize it's too late for probably most people in the Alamogordo area to come and attend, but we happened to schedule, before this whole announcement took place, an event on government's quiet land grab with Speaker Gabriela Hoffman today at noon. So it's literally, if you want to come, you got to jump in your car right now and come to the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center in Albuquerque. But we had planned this event a month or so ago, and then we suddenly have a huge land rights issue to deal with. So I can assure you that Yvette Harrell is watching this and concerned about it as well. So there's a lot going on in that issue, and will be for the foreseeable future with this monument proposal out there.
Well, Paul, let's take a minute and explain what the purpose is behind these land grabs. To me, it is, we don't want cattle, we don't want farming, and we don't want energy on those lands, and we don't want the public to access it as well.
Yeah. The last part is critical. All of those above you mentioned, yes, and that's for sure. But you're talking about limiting mechanized vehicle access or eliminating mechanized vehicle access onto the land as well. So there are a lot of things that are part of the monument designation, but basically it's anti-human, anti-progress, lock up the land, don't let anybody access it, and just have the government keep it off limits from the local population. And that's really it.
And in other words, it benefits nobody.
Well, that's financially for sure. Environmental groups would claim that it has some kinds of benefit in some way. I don't know exactly what, but yeah, it's the idea that the best use of land should be just to keep it off limits.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move on. Let's go to education, because I was reading this and I was thinking, Paul, in my mind, the schools should not get any more money at all until they show progress. We're 51st in the nation. We have a, let me find the story here, just to kind of give what this, let me find it here. Our literacy rates are down, graduation rates are down, and the low percentages. And they want $5.1 billion next year. For what?
Yeah, the amount of money being considered or proposed or asked for by the Public Education Department is positively mind-blowing. Now, first and foremost, you and I discussed the rest of the agency's requests, and we said at the time that PED would have a request at a later date because they operated on a different schedule. Now, we went back and looked at the annual operating budgets all the way back to 2008 for PED, and you're talking about, $2.92 billion, $2.99, $2.95, $2.94, and so on. And then you suddenly get, in 2019, it was $2.78 billion. So really not much had changed, and it actually shrunk a little bit all the way up 2019. Now, remember, the student population in New Mexico is stagnant at best, declining in actual terms in reality. So, yes, there's inflation, but on the other hand, the number of students attending New Mexico's public schools has been stagnant pre-COVID and dropping post-COVID. So then you get into the Lujan Grisham era, and 2020 pops up to $3.22 billion, 21, 3.46, up by 2023, 3.91, 24, 4.18, and now they're requesting 5.10. So after a relatively long period of stagnant education budget, suddenly there is a push to rapidly increase them. And of course, this is driven by not their performance or any real reforms happening. This is driven 100% by the fact that they have the money from the oil and gas industry flowing into the state, and education feels entitled to approximately half of that money. So we'll see what they get. A 21% year-over-year budget increase for a group that has done pretty horrendous job of educating the kids of the state of New Mexico. And I don't see any real changes to that happening. There are, the food universal school lunch program that costs some amount of money, but even that doesn't require a 21% annual budget increase. And we could obviously talk about whether handing every kid lunch as they walk into school, whether that's good public policy or not, really beneficial on a broader scope. But it's a rapidly increasing budget, and it's about to go pretty vertical with this increase if it's indeed ratified by the legislature.
Well, I don't have a problem with making sure every kid has a lunch, as long as that leads to something different than what I'm about to read. The share of students who can read at their grade level is 38%. Math proficiency is 24%. And the state's high school graduation rate hovers at 76%. These are all well below the national averages. And we're pumping money into a program to continue these types of results. The only thing that I can see is more teachers and more teachers in the teacher union, so the union gets more money.
Yeah, I would be fine also with handing every kid a lunch if there was some evidence that actually impacted results in the classroom in terms of what the schools are supposed to be doing. But it's hard, there was really no evidence provided for that. Mm-hmm. And certainly haven't seen any evidence to that effect since the program was implemented. So, yeah, all we're asking for all this money is results, and that is the one thing that has been elusive.
Yep, no doubt about that. Well, Catholic schools' closure highlights very different approaches to education and the use of resources. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, there's a Catholic school in the city of Albuquerque that has announced that it's going to close. For your listeners, the name is Our Lady of Fatima. It's by no means the only Catholic school that has closed or is closing, because New Mexico is losing young people. School districts across New Mexico, public schools, are losing population, losing students. This is both a New Mexico trend and a national trend. Nationally, there's a lot of reporting that's been going on about the birth rate declining and how that's going to cause problems for the future of the country. But New Mexico in particular is losing its young people as well. And that was the case, according to data from the Legislative Finance Committee, even prior to the COVID-19 pandemic. But we heard story after story during the pandemic, and we're just waiting for kind of the more fully fleshed out data to highlight how exactly the number of young people left New Mexico, what that data really say. But we know from basic experience that New Mexico did see young people leave the state. So one of the things that is worth noting, and I realize that Catholic schools are schools of choice. They are schools that people pay to go to, and that creates a value proposition that simply isn't there when you offer something for free. But it is notable that in the NAEP scores, the very same test in 2022 that found New Mexico at the very bottom in all the major categories, reading and math, Catholic schools, if you considered them a district of their own, would have been the top performing district in the entire country. And certainly school choice could and should be a part of New Mexico's education proposition, but unfortunately the legislature is dominated by the teachers unions, and they don't want to see competition, so they're not going to allow for or bring about a program that involves choice. So the Catholic schools, though, could, I believe, if given more, given some help through a tax credit or education savings accounts legislation, could move the needle significantly in New Mexico's education problem and its challenge. But again, the teachers' unions block that at every turn, and New Mexico likely will not see much in the way of improvement in future NAEP tests and other measures of educational success. So we're likely to be stuck spending more money for results that are as bad or worse than they have been in recent years.
Well, let's make it clear. These types of avoiding and not supporting these programs goes clearly to the bottom line of the union leadership paychecks, not the teachers' paychecks, but the union leadership. Those are the folks that are making the big bucks.
Very true. Very true.
All right. So, well, let's recap this one again. Michelle Lujan Grisham's next attempt to force EVs on you and how you can push back. Don't buy them. Don't take them. Don't accept them.
Yeah. No doubt. And probably you'll have to go out of state to find a future vehicle if this whole thing takes effect. But, reality is that the governor has not just pushed on the buying of the vehicles or limiting what kind of vehicles can be sold in the state of New Mexico, but she has also and is currently in the process of trying to force commercial buildings, and that includes apartments. And we talked about this, but now the rubber is hitting the road, so to speak. So the good news is that the regulation no longer calls for 20% of all commercial development parking spots to be electric vehicle charging station outfitted. So the original idea announced back in September was that 20% of all the new the parking spots in a new commercial development that includes apartment buildings would have to be outfitted with a charging station. We're talking $18,000 per charging unit. So that's going to dramatically increase the price of those, apartment buildings and commercial buildings. And that's going to be passed on to the consumers and the people of the state of New Mexico. This will be a statewide regulation. So now the Construction Industries Division is considering a 5% mandate, so still 5% of all the parking spots having an $18,000 EV charging unit available, with 15% of the parking spaces being what's called EV capable. That means that you need certain features, including the raceway, panel capacity, and dedicated circuits, so that the spot can be outfitted later on with a charging unit. But that infrastructure costs $1,600 or more, up to $2,000 per parking space for these new commercial developments. So it's still, you're taking a parking space, which is essentially negligible. It's the price of the pavement and the striping and the real estate it's built on, and now adding nearly $2,000 just for the electric vehicle panel outfitting. So we have rebooted our keepyourcarsin.com website. We are encouraging people to reach out to the Commercial Industries Division. They will be voting on this by January 3rd. Comments must be received no later than Tuesday, January 2nd, 2024. So this regulation is coming and coming quickly. And so we encourage people to send their comments in. I do, quite honestly, being frank, don't believe that we can defeat this or we will defeat this proposal. I think it's baked in as, these unelected boards kind of march to the tune called by the governor. But it is important to highlight that a majority of the people weighing in are opposed to it, and that can be useful in future litigation and other efforts to overturn this kind of initiative. If the people just sit back and accept what is happening, then they will only use this as future justification for more and more regulations in the future, or mandating that all of those EV-capable spots be outfitted immediately with charging units, or retrofitting existing commercial buildings and apartment complexes with charging stations. So just because this is where the regulation stands currently, and they the commercial real estate advocates were able to kind of push back against this a little bit, that doesn't mean that there won't be a future initiative to further push this high cost onto the backs of New Mexicans, especially apartment dwellers.
Well, I tell you what, the whole thing on this EV mandate stuff is mind-blowing to me, because it's all funded by oil and gas, and now you've got agencies saying much of the state incomes comes from oil and gas, and the money must be set aside because oil and gas could falter in the future. Well, you're destroying it, but you want to use it. What are they going to do if they get their way and then oil and gas is no more? Where's the money going to come from?
Given the current political makeup and the current attitude of the governor and the legislature, if oil and gas were to go away, New Mexico would be completely desolate. There would be, I think, an immediate drop in population of 10 to 15% as people left for better jobs and better opportunities, and government was forced to shrink dramatically, which in the long term might actually be a good thing, because, you know, as much as we benefit from oil and gas that our state does have under the soil here, it also subsidizes a lot of bad behavior by our political leadership and the voters who put them back into place. If I had my druthers, Mike, I would prefer that the federal government just reduce its footprint in New Mexico, and maybe not like Holloman Air Force Base, but maybe Sandia National Lab or one of these labs that we have here in the liberal area of New Mexico, where we're the culprits in Albuquerque and other parts of central New Mexico. We're the ones that keep electing these dunderheaded politicians. So the federal government obviously needs to rapidly shrink its footprint, because it is massively indebted and simply cannot afford to maintain the amount of spending that goes on. So I would encourage, I would have encouraged President Trump to do something like that in the past. And if President Trump is reelected and gets back to the White House, I think he should be willing to take on some of these spending initiatives, especially things that theoretically benefit these deep blue states that never vote for him. And I know vindictiveness is not always good public policy, but in this case, it would actually be good public policy. And New Mexico really needs to get off of the reliance on the federal government, and the oil and gas industry props that up, unfortunately, while also benefiting our nation and everybody that drives a vehicle or keeps warm at night or wears clothes that have plastic or artificial materials in them. Oil and gas really transcends motor fuels to every aspect of our society. So, yeah, we don't want to get rid of that, even though it does incentivize some really bad behavior by our political class.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Paul, it is 9:03. We've used up our time. Maybe I asked too many questions, but if we can save Trevor Albuquerque cartoon and A.G. Raul Torres until next week?
Well, the Trevor cartoon is very simple.
Let's do it.
Flying around on a private jet that says EV mandate with Dubai looking suspiciously like the Emerald City. And she leaves a trail of smoke that says surrender your SUVs. And she is dressed up as the Wicked Witch of the West from The Wizard of Oz. It is an epic cartoon, and I think it really captures the governor's personality very nicely, as well as her hypocrisy for getting on these planes and flying off around the world to Australia, Dubai, and other places. So Trevor from the Albuquerque Journal is a treasure of the state of New Mexico, and I think this cartoon may be his best yet. So, yeah, we'll talk about the other stuff next time.
All right. Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation. We'll talk to you again next Tuesday, because this last one I find very interesting, and definitely want to get into that one. Paul, thank you for your time. We'll talk to you next week. Until then, have a great one, my friend.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
We are Active Radio, 88.9 FM, KHII Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and 102.3 KEDU Ruidoso.